Okay, we're back. And I'm sure a lot of you recognize the name Jake Gyllenhaal. He has been in so many great movies, and we're not going to talk about any of them today because of the ongoing WGA strike. However, Jake Gyllenhaal is now an author. He and his longtime friend Greta Caruso have written a book. It's called The Secret Society of Aunts and Uncles. It's a children's book. It's delightful. And we're going to talk all about it along with the illustrator of that book, the very talented Caldecott medalist Dan Santat. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so Greta, can you describe a vivid memory you have of one of your aunts practicing peak auntiology, or an uncle being like the greatest uncleologist you could imagine?
Yes, and thank you so much for using the correct terminology.
I've studied.
It's actually auntistry is also a version of it, just in case you want to use it. My aunt Nancy, to whom I dedicated the book, she is continues to be really amazing, and would let me have Coke, which is peak auntistry.
Coca-Cola.
But to my parents, they're the same things, honestly. They're real like health food Ellie in the 90s types.
Coca-Cola.
Really important. She one time picked me up from a piano lesson that she had sat in on. And I have really wonderful parents, and they were very supportive and told me I was really good at piano. But the truth was, I just didn't care about it, and I didn't practice it basically ever. Mm-hmm. And after the piano lesson, Nancy was driving me home, and I turned to her and I was like, pretty good, huh? And she looked at me and she was like, you know, you're just not that good at piano. And I was totally shocked by it, but that has come up so much when we were writing this book, because she was just straight with me in a way that parents can't really be. But it was a moment where I really realized that I could trust her in a pretty profound way. And also it was really funny to tell like a 9-year-old that they're bad at piano, but I needed to hear it. I really was.
But also your parents were like, were they like, oh, you're amazing.
Yeah, they were doing that parenting.
It was amazing.
Incredible. And I wasn't.
You sound like me. Piano like me. Terrible.
Exactly.
And who do you become if you don't have that truth-telling aunt or uncle, right? Like, it's totally changed the trajectory of who you become.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need someone.
It's true.
You need a Nancy. I have an Aunt Nancy, too. And I feel like a lot of people have Aunt Nancy's. Do you find a lot of other Aunt Nancy's in your orbit?
I don't.
I don't think there are enough Aunt Nancy's in the world. But I do think, you know, aunts and uncles, they don't need to be blood relatives, but I do think most people have in their childhood, it could be a teacher, it could be a coach, it could be someone that was an adult figure that kind of, that was honest with them about things, maybe talked to them about things that they weren't getting at home. I just think it is essential.
Yeah. What about you, Jake? You didn't have the truth teller, but what did you have? Who was, give me some aunt or uncle canonical moments.
I had definitely had truth tellers. I mean, but I would say for me, my uncle Max, like, he was always so playful, and like, I think he always showed me like how to have fun. You know, he was goofy, and like, sometimes I'd be like pretty serious kid, but I'm actually not that serious at all. I think he really showed me that, you know, I'm come from a family of like, they make very dramatic movies and stories and stuff. And he was like, eh. And yeah. I caught a shark with my Uncle Bob once.
An actual shark.
Yeah, we caught a shark. No, he had a boat. My Uncle Bob had a sailboat. He sailed all the time. And that was like, we spent a lot of time in a sailboat. And but yeah, we caught a shark on a boat. And he was like, we caught it. We reeled it in.
That's very cool.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess that's the form of truth telling, right? Catching a shark, right?
Catching a shark, catching a big fish.
Yeah.
An actual big fish.
Yeah.
But it's interesting what you're saying about your uncle, you know, kind of like helping to find an equilibrium between the perhaps like the seriousness of your parents' world and Greta, like the, you know, the seriousness of Coke being, you know, prohibited. Like, aunts and uncles are really good at showing you that there is another way, but not.
Yeah, there's
a space, like a very, very unique space where, you know, parents have this unconditional love that I think also blinds them. And I think that blind spot is like, right where the aunt and uncle fit, where you can still fit in the world of love, but you know, you can also say, you know, you can go do this, take this risk, you know, it's okay. It's not gonna harm you. It might actually help grow you. I think that's the necessary kind of angle that the aunt and uncle should sit at, is kind of knowing their sibling and knowing the strengths and weaknesses of them.
Yeah.
And helping them parent in those spaces that they may be a bit afraid of. Like, that's the best version of the aunt and uncle.
Totally. Dan, have you worked on any aunt and uncle literature before?
No, actually, it's very, very uncommon. Mm-hmm. It's typically about like a grandmother, a grandfather, right. Parent, pet dog, you know, things like that. But, you know, it's not, you might have, you know, an aunt or uncle on the periphery, you know, just kind of adding color to the story, but never centralized on an aunt and uncle. So I think that's,
totally.
I think it's fascinating that this script came about.
I'm curious though. So since like you haven't worked with an aunt and uncle that have kind of taken center stage before, how did you think about personifying these characters with your illustrations?
So I'm, you know, my parents are expats. They came to America from Thailand. I might bring this room down a little bit. So I never really got to meet my aunts and uncles. I have only gotten the opportunity once. And I remember there was this one moment where I found out that my uncle, my mom's younger brother, he was a cop. He was a cop in Thailand. I remember it was like this one moment where I see his police ID, right? And I'm looking at it and I'm like, wow, that's fascinating, you know. And then he removes the badge, and then he takes his revolver, he takes his big revolver out of the box, right? And he holds it up and he's like, yeah, this is in Thai. And I can only speak like a 5-year-old, right? And he's holding this revolver in his hand. He looks at me, he's like, yeah, here's my gun. And I'm like, yes. And he says, you want to hold it? And I'm just like looking around, you know, thinking, what is my mom going to think? What's my mom going to think that her brother is like handing this gun? I'm looking over and he says, it's okay. It's not loaded. And I say, yes. And he hands me the revolver and I'm holding it. It's like the first time I ever held a gun. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it was freaky. And then I hear my mom come in and he just yanks the gun out of my hand. He yanks the gun out of my hand and tucks away. And he winks at me. And I'm like, oh, we weren't supposed to do this. This was awesome. And I kind of just translated that later on, like in life, where when I eventually became an uncle to my wife's sister's kids, I have two nieces. And I remember I had this, you know, at the time, I think my niece, Anya, she was, oh gosh, maybe really young, like 3 years old. And I went to their house and they had this weird relationship with their neighbors where the doors would just mm-hmm. open and people could just walk in and out as they pleased. And I was just thinking to myself, like, is it cool mm-hmm. to just like let people go in and out here, you know? And my niece, 3 years old, just starts walking into the house. And I'm like, Anya, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think you can just walk into somebody's house. And there was this phrase that she had just learned and she knew it was bad because I remember when she said it to me, she was so ashamed. She couldn't even make eye contact with me. She's staring at the ground because she's so disgusted about what she's about to say, but she's saying it to me. She says, Uncle Dan, what the hell's your problem? And I was like, okay, I'll just let you walk in the house. And she just walks into the house and she comes out maybe like 5 minutes later. I'm just standing there. I didn't want to go into the house and say like, hi, I'm Uncle Dan. You know, I'm Asian, but she's white. So I have to explain this whole thing. And she comes out and then she like gives me a high five. She's like, thanks for covering. You know, it's like, what? Like, how did you even know that phrase to me? And so that's
like where you're coming from. Wow. You two are old friends, Jake and Greta, and I'm curious what kinds of conversations you were having that led to this idea of let's write a children's book about aunts and uncles.
Well, at first, you know, we started this book like during the Lincoln administration a while ago. And so at first we talked a lot about the books that we loved when we were kids. And then we talked a lot about the kind of children's book we felt like we were in a position to write at that point in our lives. And I think it's a relationship, this aunt, uncle, niece, nephew relationship, one that we've talked a lot about and one that has served us both in really different ways. And it's one that's, you know, been totally forgotten by children's literature, as Dan said, and really is its own thing that requires a kind of different sort of treatment. When we started, I was just a niece and now I'm an aunt twice over and a mom. So we've added some new people to the mix, but I think that was the initial thing. That kind of inspired the idea.
Do you have theories about why aunts and uncles have been overlooked?
Just injustice.
General injustice.
I think, you know, it's interesting in that, like, I don't think it's commonly thought of as a significant relationship, you know, in that there are so many stories about siblings, you know, relationship with siblings is biblical, right?
Yep.
And yet kind of the offshoot of that is aunting and uncling, you know? But I just think it's probably, you know, we're more inclined towards stories that seem like big gestures. And the essence of this story is that the small gesture is sometimes, particularly for a child, like a huge gesture. Those little things we remember. It's why when I remember reading children's books as a kid, it's the small things that I'd pass over and then find again on the 10th read, you know, that I fell in love with books as a result of that. That's why Dan's illustrations are so extraordinary, because filled with wonderful detail and Easter eggs, and he gets to know his authors, and he is so deeply involved in the storytelling process and was with us. And so, you know, like, I think it's the small things that have the most significance and yet are oftentimes overlooked. So it's not surprising to me that relationship, which I've discovered with my nieces, it's easy to say, but harder to say, like, I'm just going to sit and ask you how you are and see you. And that's going to define our relationship. And that's what the book is about, is just the nephew, Leo in this case, but it can be a niece too, like just defining what an aunt or an uncle is. And that's what the idea is. And it's, you know, it's just like, I remember becoming an uncle and being like, whoa, like I'm Uncle Jake now, like forever.
It's a big deal.
It's like, put it on my CV, man. Like that's to me better than any award, you know?
Yeah, that's sweet. I have to be honest, I've thought to myself over the years, especially now that I have kids and I read a lot of children's books, I've thought to myself, like, it can't be that hard to write a children's book. But I haven't done it. And so what were you surprised to be like, oh, no, I was totally wrong. Like this certain thing.
That interesting. Silly idea.
It's called hubris, my friend. And
oh, yeah.
It helps us all.
Hubris and chutzpah.
Yes, we were quite arrogant. We were like secret society aunts and uncles. Boom.
Boom. Perfect. Book done. 700 years later.
Yeah.
Ramona's actually 75 years old now.
Yeah. Truly, it was really hard. It's really, I mean, not to be too simplistic about it, it's really hard because it's so few words. And so if you had the opportunity to just write as much as you wanted, it would really cover for a lot of fat in the story. And because you're not able to do that, there can't be like one superfluous word. It just took us forever. And I think the huge missing piece in the process for us was Dan and his illustrations, that we had this. We were like circling around this idea and had these characters and we kind of knew the shape of things, but we just didn't know how that kind of amorphous idea was going to become a children's book. And then when we met Dan and he sketched out these two characters, it really just brought it to life almost instantaneously.
Yeah, I felt like I was in an editing room and shooting a movie at the same time. It was so fun. It was like, sometimes I felt like we were doing like a cold reading. Do you know what I mean, Dan? Like when we'd be working together and I'd be like, when they give you a script and you're just like, okay, bring out all the tools you've used for the years. And Dan was doing that with the illustrations. And it was just so inspiring.
Mm.
You know, it was like, I remember mentioning that it felt like we were in an editing room, you know, where you would look at something and tighten up a scene. I will say this, because when the manuscript first came to me, gosh, if I recall, I think the manuscript was sitting somewhere at like 62 pages. And typically picture books are 32 to 40 pages. And the one thing that I really have to give credit to Jake and Greta about is that, you know, I've sometimes worked with other celebrities and, you know, they'll be insistent that, you know, it has to be this way. And then you kind of have to conform to what they want. But, you know, they were both so amazing in the process of just kind of letting go of the steering wheel and saying, you know, this isn't our realm. This isn't what we're comfortable with. I remember Jake specifically saying, you know, like, I know story, I just don't know children's books. So I need to understand. I need your help. And he just gave me the manuscript and he said, please, please make this better. And I've never seen two people learn so quickly, because I've worked with some very well-known authors who insist that their words be, you know, precious. And here I was watching Jake and Greta just, you know, just slice and dice away to the point where we actually got it down to 34.
I mean, I think that's the process of, like, in movies in particular, that's the process of it, right? Like, as you shape something, you know, you have to be a visual, it is a visual medium. So you have to be aware of the literal and the visual. You have to be a literary, the visual. You have to know that there's a structural story that needs to be told, but, like, there are things that can be told in behavior. There, as a performer in particular, you can say, I don't need to say that, I can communicate that. But you can only know you can communicate that if you're aware and connected to the narrative, right? It's not just thinking about character and your character where they're at. I'm an actor who's thinking about story first and plugging my character into the story. So you have to be aware of the backbone. And it's the same thing with this process was when you have someone with Dan's expertise, what you can do is you can say, I've always dreamed of a 3-word page, right? Like, I don't want anything more than 3 words. I can visualize that's what I want, but there are 15 words here. And it's annoying me that it's taking us 15 words to say this. And then Dan goes, well, I drew this. And then I go, oh, okay, well, that means we can take out 4 words. Okay, now we're still left. We still have 9 words and we need to get rid of, at the most, we need 6 more to go. Can we do it? And then we take out this word, it doesn't work. But then he adds, that inspires him to write that, draw that illustration. And then that was how it worked. And
that sounds really fun.
It was so fun.
I mean, I feel like the moment where we were just high on cutting pages and cutting text. Oh, yeah. And then there were a few little things in the end that we got either added back in or added that we hadn't had in there. And they were so meaningful. It felt like such a surgical kind of addition.
That's fun. That's awesome.
The word choice towards the end, particularly as Dan was saying, the emotional spots, like when he talks the rubber band and stuff, like you really do see when you talk about when the best authors, the ones I love so much, like, when they talk about structuring and restructuring a sentence, sometimes things flow and they don't even remember what they wrote. And then sometimes they stick for like weeks on a sentence, you know, because the choice is so dire between an and and an you know what I mean? And I felt the pressure of putting that into print, and we did too, where there was like a freedom. And then it starts to narrow. And you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
But it was really a magical process in the end, and like a wonderful, like I reached out to Dan, like I just DM'd him because like I love his work and I thought it was a long shot. You know, I was just like, yo, we love your work. Like, would you ever be interested? You know? And I was just like, oh yeah. Hey, cool. What's up? Sure. You know? And I was like, what the, you know?
Thank God.
Yeah. But it was so cool. You know, it was like our instincts had led us to him. Right. And then I think it was right. Our instincts matched up. Like, there was a reason why I reached out to him.
That was Jake Gyllenhaal, Greta Caruso, and Dan Santat talking about their new book, The Secret Society of Aunts and Uncles.